Thanks, Theo. Good to see you again. Here's another little chat to your neighbour thing to get us going this evening. When were you ever in a place where you felt, wow, I can't believe that I'm actually standing here? Maybe something to do with a sports pitch that you'd always wanted to stand in, or a city that you'd always wanted to visit. To give you an example of the kind of thing, I once visited the set of Neighbours. I once actually stood in Ramsey Street, and that felt amazing. You might be able to top that. Just have a chat with the person next to you. Good, may I break in there? We won't feedback on that at the moment. We'll see how we go. This is a psalm about someone who's very excited to be standing in a particular city. I don't know if you know that over 50% of the world's population now live in cities. They reckon that by 2050 that will be two-thirds of the world. And so the economists have started what they call an annual safe city index. They measure various factors, including the quality of health in that place, personal safety, infrastructure, digital safety. Anyone guess what is the safest city to live in, according to The Economist? Tokyo. Oh, yeah, Roseanne, straight away. There you go. It's true, it's Tokyo. Well, I have to tell you, Roseanne, London didn't come out brilliantly on that survey. The only thing I came away thinking was, at least we don't have so many earthquakes over here, until I read this headline: London and home counties at risk of major earthquake as super deep fault lines are discovered. That was in the Sunday Express. They put the words major earthquake in bold letters just in case I hadn't realised that it was sensational, or sensationalised, you might say. It's complicated being an urban dweller, isn't it? If you manage not to catch your hair on the escalator of the underground, and even if there is no earthquake while you're here, then did you know that the London pigeons will be the end of you? They think that the Black Death might have been caused by fleas that live on tiny mice that live on pigeons. I always mention that to our new international students when they arrive in town every September. Welcome to London. Of course, the biggest problem in cities is not from the pigeons, it's from people. I don't know if you remember that old movie, well, it was the 80s, I think, Crocodile Dundee. He lives in the outback and they take him to New York and they tell him there are 7 million people in New York, to which Crocodile Dundee says, 7 million people all wanting to live together. New York must be the friendliest city in the world. And that's kind of funny, but it's a bit of a sick joke, isn't it, if you've experienced some of the harm that people can do to you in a big, bad city. More people rubbing shoulders means more sinful hearts floating around and more pain to cause. If you're trying to be one of God's sojourners and you live in a city, expect to be bombarded with lots that will make you say, woe to me. Well, wonderfully, we're going to take a walk around a very different kind of city. This is our first proper glimpse, really, of how it feels in the Song of Ascents to find yourself inside the city of God. One of the ways of structuring these 15 Songs of Ascents is to divide the 15 of them into groups of three. Alec Mateer is the commentator who's done the work on this one. And so the theory is that within each group of three, you go down the curve, woe to me, but we're helped along the way, and finally, relief. That certainly works very well for this first trio. You can look at the others, see if you think it works for them too. Back in their day, it must have been quite a thing for weary Jewish pilgrims to finally arrive, whether it was up for the feast or back home after exile. Even the thought of it was exciting. Verse 1, I was glad
when they said to me, "Let us go to the house of the Lord."
Do you want to go up to Jerusalem?
Oh yeah, that would be something. Verse 2 is how we feel when we get there. "Our feet have been standing within your gates, O Jerusalem." I don't know what it was you mentioned earlier, that place it was amazing to be, the hallowed turf at Wembley or Lourdes or a particular city. This psalm's been turned into a famous piece of music. Many of you will know, "I Was Glad." That was what Kate Middleton walked up the aisle to on the day of her wedding. And that was probably her moment like this, wasn't it? "I can't believe I'm actually standing here in the Abbey, walking up to meet my prince." Actually standing within the gates of Jerusalem, God's place. That feels amazing. And as I said, this is just a taster of what it's like to be there in the Psalms of Ascent. The final three songs of Ascent, all three of those basically just go round how great it is to be home. But here, earlier in the journey, is a glimpse inside the gates. And it seems that it's been positioned here to keep weary travellers going as we journey up. If you want a little suggested structure for this psalm, and it's going to come up on the screen, thanks Porter, we can leave that up there and you can follow that through. Jerusalem, the people of the Lord, gathered round the throne, enjoying perfect peace. So let's, shall we, walk round it for a few minutes. And as we do, please remember, this is your place. You belong there. Try and imagine yourself into it. Would it be good to be home? Would even the thought of it make you glad? So verses 1 to 4, the people of God. Did you notice how some of the individual language that we'd had in the previous two psalms, "Woe to me, my help comes from the Lord," that has been replaced mainly by corporate words. Verse 1, "Let us go to the house of the Lord," they said, "our feet standing within your gates." One of the big features of your home city is the people being there together. And even the design of the place as it's described seems to be designed to reflect that. So verse 3, "Jerusalem built as a city that is bound firmly together." That language of bound together means closely compacted, including, it seems, the people being close together. They're certainly the big thing that gets mentioned here. And already, maybe this picture of Jerusalem is starting to ring bells with the picture of the new Jerusalem right at the end of the Bible, Revelation 21. Do you remember that when John asks to see the city, it's the people that are described in this sort of weirdly closely compacted cube, as it is there, and that contains in Revelation 21 the tribes. See verse 4, who's coming up to this city? The tribes of the Lord, coming up together to worship him. See, when you think of London or New York or Paris, I wonder what the first thing that comes into your head is. We tend to think maybe of the landmark buildings, don't we? So Paris is the Eiffel Tower. Do a word association game with God. Say, Jerusalem, what are you thinking of? And the first thing he's thinking about is the people who will be there, the tribes who are joined together in that place. Now, this is kind of following on from where we were this morning, because William asked us then about how we're picturing heaven and some of the misconceptions about that. I don't know how you think about it. I think we know, don't we? We know that it shouldn't just be people floating on clouds, but maybe we picture your individual mansion in a field with quite a lot of space before you get to anyone else and their mansion. Well, in God's city, it's not spread out, see, it's bound firmly together. Even the people seem to be closely compacted as a way of expressing their unity. Now, this could start to, I was chatting to Chris the other day, this could sound a bit like we're saying the New Jerusalem is a bit like that building outside there that's four stories high and looks like it might have been built in the 1960s. Do you know the bit of the building I mean? Chris, tell me what it's called, the official name for it, not the thing that you call it.
Tent Hill House,
thank you. Good. Chris has another name for it, but we won't tell you what it is, just in case it gets back to the architect. But Chris tells me that being in that part of the building, he calls it an exploration in communal living, which is a very diplomatic way of putting it, Chris. You might say over there in Tent Hill House, everything and everyone are firmly compacted and bound together. And if you were thinking that was the only part of Ashburnham that isn't a little taster of the new heavens and the new earth, well, it turns out here that it's the first part that actually is that taster. Now, I'm aware that that kind of talk could start to have the opposite effect of what's being desired here. And I know that some of us are more like Shrek than Donkey when it comes to being around others, generally. Some of us like our en suites over in Moor House. Obviously, this is poetic. Doesn't necessarily mean we're all going to be living together in one giant gherkin. And if you want some me time in the New Jerusalem, I'm sure that facilities will be available. But God's tribes will be together, is the point. And we will love that. Because what that will mean here in the context is it will mean we won't be scattered in just tiny clusters out in the faraway places together. And in all of our differences and all the different parts of the world that we come from, we'll be together. We're going to see the opening ceremony of the Olympics in a few weeks. I'm sure it will be good. Obviously not as good as London 2012. But people think it's so extraordinary that you can get the whole world together for that kind of event. Here is something more profound to unite the tribes of the world. The thing that unites them is they can't get enough of the Lord. He's what defines and unites these people. They're the tribes, verse 4 says, of the Lord. And we'll all want to be part of the crowd when we're there, giving thanks to the name of the Lord. You know, I was thinking earlier, sometimes when I think about the new creation, I'm excited about the stuff that God will give me that will be good when I'm there. But not so much about actually being with him and other people. It's fine that we call it the new creation, but actually remembering that it's the new Jerusalem reminds us that actually the purpose of being there is the peoples together gathered for worship. That's what will really be exciting. And just as the earthly pilgrims who first travelled to that earthly Jerusalem got some kind of foretaste of it, we do too. Actually, a much better foretaste, because we know the king who's going to be there. Hebrews 12 is... Can you turn to Hebrews 12? Actually, page 1009. Where's quoted from Hebrews earlier. It's very appropriate because it's written to weary travellers to encourage them on to the city. Hebrews 12, verse 22. But you have come, notice you have already come to Mount Zion and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to the innumerable angels in festal gathering, and to the assembly of the firstborn who are enrolled in heaven, and to God, the judge of all. Notice where it is that we get the foretaste, that in a sense we can say we're already there. Verse 23, It's when you've come to the assembly, that's the word that means church, it's the assembly of the people of God that are the foretaste. And of course, that's one of the reasons why the assembly, the church of God in the world, is so precious. It's why weeks like this are so precious, aren't they? Isn't it wonderful to be together singing God's praises? The love and family care that you experience on a week like this, even just the desire that we be together as the people of God, is a wonderful godly thing. And I hope that you feel some of this foretaste in your home assembly, your local part of the church. But it's just a foretaste. Sadly, while we're sojourners, some of the woe to me, some of the despair on the journey arises from things that happen in the church of God. But don't underestimate the importance of the assembly of God. Certainly don't give up on the church. God never will. Because when he gives us a picture of his Jerusalem, the first thing he gives us is a picture of the assembly, the tribes gathered there to worship him. And it will be great to be there like that, won't it? It'll mean never rubbing each other up the wrong way, even though we're in close quarters. That sometimes happens, doesn't it? The closer we are as brothers and sisters, the more we can annoy each other sometimes. None of the pain of the disunity and the sin that means we still hurt each other. Isn't it gutting that we still hurt one another within our Christian family? This really will be millions of us wanting to live together. It will be the friendliest city in the world because we're united there around who we are in the Lord. And verse 5, which is our second one of those that we'll just touch on briefly, says a little bit more about the glue that will hold us together there. Maybe you've been wondering, where's Jesus in the Psalms of Ascent? When are we going to mention him a bit more? Well, here he is in verse 5. He's the one on the throne of the house of David. His role will be expanded in Psalm 132. The forever king will meet there on his throne with a crown that shines. That will be Thursday night. It's going to be a great high point, I hope, for us to finish as we look at the king. He's not mentioned here personally as the anointed one, but his throne is, we get a glimpse of. And it's not surprising, is it, that at the heart of the picture of your home city is the throne of the Davidic king. Not only is he the focus for our unity, but because he is there on his throne of judgment, he is a focus for stability and peace and the justice that we will enjoy there. If you're brain still in gear, which I hope it is, just step out with me backwards from the Songs of Ascent for a second. Actually, in a way, the story of the whole book of Psalms is the search for the picked person who will sit on that throne. Remember Psalm 2, the anointed one? Is it going to be David? Is it going to be Solomon? Could it be anyone? We're going down the curve. Well, here at the end of the Psalms, we're starting to meet the person, the hero king, who is fit and can make us fit for that place where he will rule. We'll say more about that on Thursday as we look at him in more detail, but for now we're reminded that his throne is the linchpin of the whole arrangement. And again, interesting, isn't it? In Revelation 21 and 22, right at the end of the Bible, after the people of God, the tribes are described, we get that description of the throne. And then all the blessings that flow out from the throne to the people of the nations. And I think our final verses here, 6 to 9, are a prayer that all of those blessings will flow from his throne. When you've got a united people around a perfect king on a powerful throne, what's that a recipe for? Peace. which in the original Jerusalem in some ways happened. It was a very secure city, in part because of its geography. It's the city that dominates the Book of Kings, as it's the focus for the cohesion and the worship of the people of God. It did sometimes actually, in a good way, shadow the bigger realities. But of course, a tragic story of the city of Jerusalem. And we read that part in Luke's Gospel earlier today, where Jesus weeps over the special place having become full of such godlessness. We're praying for peace here in verses 6 to 9 because we're not there yet. But these prayers will be answered in the city. And we'll see that on Thursday. But just look what we're praying for. See, we're praying for not just peace and security. In verse 8, for my brothers and companions' sake, I will say peace be within you. This is not just, I hope, well, I'll contribute to London for the good of the aspiration of me and my own family. I actually want the city to go well because I want it to go well for my brothers. And I want it for the Lord's sake. No selfish motives here at all. That word security that comes up in verse 6 and verse 7 means at ease. A nation at ease with ourselves. One of our prime ministers promised that, didn't they? Well, this will be a city where you are at ease. None of the things that could make you anxious or feel in danger will never be part of your experience at all. And this is way more than just, well, with Jesus on the throne, we should expect this to be top of the safe city index in all of the areas that we talked about earlier. Remember our context here? This is a place where you're saying peace and no one is saying war back to you. No lying lips. No battle to be godly, like the one Theo described. No conflict when you do try. No more out of sorts or woe to me. Or feeling like the only one. Or wondering what they actually say about you when you go off to the lunchtime talk. Do you ever wonder? No one shouting that you're a fundamentalist, or cutting you out of the friendship group, or the family. William talked about that earlier. Wouldn't that be, that would be one of the worst things, wouldn't it? Disowned by your family? Well, in this city, everyone will be there. You'll be with your brothers and sisters, a family, looking out for each other, caring for each other, and at ease, because the Lord is on the throne. I wonder if you can imagine yourselves into the gates of the city. It's great just to wander round it for a few minutes, but remember, this picture is here for a purpose. Does the thought of that city help you along the road? Do you know the old hymn, we're marching to Zion, beautiful, beautiful Zion, marching upwards to Zion, the beautiful city of God. I asked Wes if we might be able to sing that song. Apparently we don't have a license, which I was a bit disappointed about. I thought at first Wes was telling me that he had copyrighted the name Zion for his own family's use, for their children, that kind of thing. So if you want to join me for an illegal rendition later on, maybe we can have one. I wonder if, like me, you sometimes forget that's the point, actually. We're on the road to that place. It's the point of life. I always think about my old granddad. He was Brethren, and actually, Wes, he would have wanted to sing your song. He wouldn't have taken no for an answer. He would have said, "We're singing it, whether we've got a license or no." Probably. So you'd have wouldn't have wanted to meet him. And you would probably think, if you're my generation, that my old granddad and his Brethren mates were a bit old-fashioned. You might think they could have been a wee bit more involved with the world, a bit more relevant to people. You might have said to them, you know, you don't have to be quite so detached from the world. And in some ways you might be right. But I think he would want to say back to me, Kev, maybe you have just been in danger of unpacking the suitcases a little bit too much here. Treated London as if it was Jerusalem. Maybe forgotten that this is just a journey. I remember at his funeral, my old granddad, on the order of service, it said, Robert Hay called home to the Lord on whatever day it was. And that was the way they used to talk. Called home was what they would say when one of their buddies from church died. London is a great city, isn't it? I really love it. Apparently, 5 out of the last 7 years, London has been the most popular tourist destination in the world. So there you go, Roseanne. You can tell them that in Tokyo with their safe city. And weeks like this are great, aren't we? Maybe we can feel a little bit sheltered on a week like this. We're very blessed, aren't we? You know, the lying lips are saying to us, actually, it's the journey that really matters in all of this. Doesn't matter if there's anything at the end of it. Did you know that that's what your friends mean when they say it's great that you've got your summer school? They mean it's great that you're having a good time there, but if it's not all true, it doesn't really matter in the end. Maybe easy to buy that lie, mightn't it? Actually, it's the fact that there is a final destination that makes this week and any of our labours and ministries worth it at all. And friends, you know, wonderfully, there is more than this. London isn't home. The assembly is a taster of it. But one day, our feet will be standing inside the gates. And I don't know how you're doing on the road. The more you're feeling woe to me, the more you will need that encouragement. But even sometimes when we're in the battle, it can be easier just to talk about the highs and lows of the journey, can't it? And forget to encourage each other about where we're going. We need to encourage each other with this reminder of home. And so if you're battling a way to keep being a sojourner, to keep speaking and living for this, keep going in it. If you're investing in people getting there, you are no fool. People getting there is at the heart of what it's all about. And aren't we blessed in London where the tribes of the world have come to us? How can we help more of them hear about the better city? We need to pray for it. This is a prayer, verses 6 to 9. It's a prayer for the peace of that place. It's kind of a prayer for the Lord, really, isn't it, to come? Pray other people into it. You know, when you're praying with your group, it's amazing to hear of the prayer groups going on in the city. Don't just pray that they come to the event. Pray that they get there and be part of the tribe in the city. And sing about your home till it makes you feel glad. Sing to each other about it. I take it that's why we've been given these songs for the journey. Sing, talk to me about what excites you until you are standing there in our home. You might want to do that this evening. I've given us a question on the sheet there. What excites you about one day actually standing in your homeland? Could we talk about that later? Talk it into some of the woes? Let's talk about it now as we practice singing about the city. Please will you stand and let's say Psalm 122 to make each other glad. Please stand. You'll need the psalm in front of you. I'll say a song of ascent of David and then let's all join in. So Psalm 122, a song of ascent of David. I was glad when they said to me, let us go to the house of the Lord. Our feet have been standing within your gates, O Jerusalem. Jerusalem, built as a city that is bound firmly together, to which the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, as was decreed for Israel, to give thanks to the name of the Lord. Their thrones for judgment were set, the thrones of the house of David. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Peace be within your walls,
and security within your terms. For my brothers and my enemies' sake, I will say, peace be within you.
For the sake of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek your good.
And may I pray. Come, Lord Jesus. Amen.